Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. Now, we'd love to hear from you during the show, so if you have any questions or comments on anything that we're talking about today, drop us a text to 086 353 7782 or you can call the station on 776 2777 or at any stage during the week, email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Obviously, if you're listening to the repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, don't bother texting us in as we won't get to see your message. Now, today on the show, it's another busy one. We're going to be talking to John Hoyne in a few minutes from the Fisherman's Market here in Kilkenny about all things fish. Later, we'll be talking about midsummer, bees, hay, some jobs for the garden. But first, Mags, how was your week?
Good.
Good.
Well, I love this weather.
Isn't it great?
It is, yeah.
Oh, it's lovely.
And the worst thing you have to do is water vegetables morning and evening, really, at this stage, actually. But it's perfectly nice to do that on a sunny evening or in a sunny morning, so I can't complain. It was midsummer yesterday, and another day that I particularly like in the year. I actually think it should be a national holiday instead of some of the other festivals that we celebrate that we don't really celebrate anymore, just the day off. So it'd be a nice day to have off.
Wouldn't it? The Swedes do it well. The Swedes do a massive big party on midsummer. It's one of their biggest celebrations.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah. I think we should do that here. Like a beautiful evening yesterday evening, fabulous sky, bats flying around outside the back, actually, which I hadn't seen there until last night. So, I'm full of the joys of summer now that we have it.
It did really feel like there was no spring at all. We just went from winter to summer.
It did, actually. And actually, even like at this stage, we feel like we've had a summer.
It's incredible.
It's not even July yet.
Really. So it's the 22nd of June. There is, you do feel the evenings drawing in now, don't you?
Don't say that yet.
No, I love midsummer. It's one of my favourite times of the year. Sat outside with a bonfire last night and had a nice glass of wine and it bright until well after 10, you know.
But then there was a beautiful sky until nearly midnight, actually. It is a lovely, lovely festival.
Now, you've brought in a bit of cake there, have you?
Yes, I have.
Oh, very nice.
You see, I wasn't sitting out drinking last night. I was baking, actually.
I had a glass of wine.
Yeah, sure.
While preparing for today's show.
I have two gooseberry bushes in the garden, both of which the leaves have been eaten by whatever eats the leaves again this year, but it doesn't seem to affect the fruit at all. So lots of fruit, loads of fruit on it. So I picked them yesterday and I made a gooseberry cake. It's kind of a very kind of a loafy type cake and stuff. Looks quite nice and with gooseberries.
You tweeted a picture of that earlier on. It looked absolutely lovely with the sun on it and a couple of gooseberries on top to dress the picture.
That was
very nice.
Probably most food styling I have ever done, but I think it worked quite well, actually.
It was a lovely picture. Lovely picture.
So this, you can have a taste of that if you wish.
Lovely, thank you.
That's the one that I'd make pretty much every year because it's kind of a nice one for the tin.
Now, it's a lovely texture to this. A gorgeous crumb, beautiful brown colouring on the surface of it.
That's demerara sugar.
Very moist.
Nice,
that's
isn't it?
Lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, well, you're not getting the rest of that now to bring home.
No, you can have that. That's actually great. I have the rest of the cake. Will I give you the recipe for that?
Please do, yeah.
And the difference really is that it's got porridge in it. So oatmeal in it, that's blitzed, so into like a fine powder.
But it is a hearty kind of cake. Like, that's a brilliant kind of cake with a cup of coffee. Like, there's almost a small meal in that, really.
Go on a picnic type cake or
lovely,
something.
Lovely. Yeah. And we did tell people a couple of weeks ago that it was almost gooseberry picking time. So if you have a gooseberry bush, it should be laden with fruit now. Now is the peak time.
It is kind of green gooseberries now. Some of them will turn colour a little bit, some of the varieties and stuff, but mine were quite green and not as hairy as normal, and I think not as big as they've often been, and that's probably got to do with the lack of, there's been no rain.
Yeah,
up
lack
the
of
hills.
Moisture, so they're not going to be able to swell.
We've had no rain really for a month actually at this stage. So anyway, that needed 200 grams of butter, 200 grams of sugar, 4 large eggs, 200 grams of plain flour, 75 grams of yogurt, and then 100 grams of oat flour, which is just porridge. Put it in a processor and blitz it. Teaspoon of baking powder, some vanilla essence, and 300 grams of gooseberries. I can't say that I actually weighed the gooseberries. I just put in whatever I fancied. And some brown sugar for the top. So you just want to cream the butter and sugar together, make them nice and light and fluffy, and then add your egg one at a time, slowly, with a spoon of flour alternatively, the usual kind of thing. Then add in the natural yogurt. Then you're going to put your flour and, or not your flour, your oats in, then your vanilla, and then stir in, don't beat in obviously, the gooseberries, stir in your gooseberries into a nice tin. Put a couple of the gooseberries on top if you wish, and then sprinkle some brown sugar on, into the oven at 180 for about 40 minutes or thereabouts.
Well, that's a lovely cake.
It is a
really
nice cake.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, so, and that'll last for like a good few days in the tin as well. So it's a good kind of...
Well, not if it was in my house.
Well, okay.
It'd probably last a day. Very, very tasty. In exchange for some meal during the day, I could just have gooseberry.
You could also, if you wanted with that, put some elderflower cordial instead of your vanilla. If you've made some cordial, which I did actually. So that works really well with that one.
Be nice, but a bit of whipped cream as well, I think.
Yes.
Did you bring in any whipped cream for me?
Yes.
Okay, good stuff.
Yes.
Now, you were saying that your gooseberry bush is being attacked by something.
Yeah, the leaves are pretty much
all like gone.
A skeleton.
And did you get to see any of the caterpillars that were doing it?
No. No.
There's a few species that commonly predate on the leaves of the gooseberry bush. The most common one we get here is the gooseberry sawfly. It's a little bright green and dark green, or almost black, kind of striped caterpillar.
Okay.
Quite small, but they are in huge numbers. The larvae actually live in the soil over the winter, and then when they hatch, crawl up the plant and start eating the leaves. And on one bush, you might see a few nibbles, and then 2 days later, every leaf on the bush is gone. Mm. So they all hatch around the same time, they all eat around the same time, they pupate and then turn into the fly shortly thereafter. So they will, they'll absolutely decimate the bush. If it's had a chance to put out a few leaves before they've come along and taken in some goodness for itself, and it'll put out a few more leaves later in the summer, it'll be fine. But if it's attacked twice or even three times in the same year, your bush will be dead. So you'd want to keep an eye on that. There's a few ways of handling it. The easiest one, of course, is to take off all the caterpillars when you see them on the bush and try and feed them to the chickens. My chickens were never terribly interested in them.
They don't tend to like hairy caterpillars.
Yeah. I think it's just a natural thing. So they go off to the bin if you're able to pick them off. And then if you give at the end of the season, and actually a few times during the season and in early spring, if you give a bit of a hoe or a dig around the plant, you disturb the eggs and larvae in the soil, and you can destroy them that way before they actually get onto the plant.
Okay.
Of course, back in the day, there was all kinds of things that you'd spray on the bush to kill them, but we tend not to do that anymore.
But it doesn't seem to affect the fruit.
When a plant is in stress, what it does is it thinks it's going to die, and so it tries to propagate the species. So I've said it before with strawberry bushes, the best way to get good strawberries is to abuse your strawberry plant, because it thinks it's going to die and tries to put out the next generation. So just like that with the gooseberries, if it thinks it's on its way out, it puts all of its remaining energy into putting out the fruit so it can spread some seed.
Okay.
But it's not great long term for the old gooseberry bush, so you will lose them after a couple of years if you don't kind of stay on top
of it. I do need to deal with it this year then.
You do.
Yep.
Now, did you know that the French for gooseberry is groselle and maquereau?
I did.
And that means mackerel berries, due to their use in a sauce for mackerel in old French cuisine.
Yeah.
You knew that?
It would be a nice, I did actually.
Right.
I read that. It would be a nice thing with mackerel. The combination of the oily fish.
I love mackerel, and probably no better man to speak to us about mackerel and all things fishy is John Hoyne. John, how are you?
I'm good. And you?
Thanks a million for coming in to join us today. All the way from the Fisherman's Market down in Hebron.
That's right.
Not too far away from us.
No.
A busy time of the year?
It is. It's quite busy at the minute, yes. The warm weather, it can go either way for us. Mm. If it gets too warm, people tend to go barbecue way. Can't really relate to the fish and the barbecues, so it's up to us to do a bit of marketing and educate people. You can barbecue fish too.
I love doing a bit of fish on the barbie.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And there's a nice little kind of cage you can get, and if you put in a whole fish like a bream or something like that,
that's right.
Sea bass, and then you can just flip it over nice and easy. Yeah.
I just suggest a lot of people just wrap it up in tinfoil.
Perfect.
Because the whole idea is people just want to cook outdoor. So best thing to do and easiest thing to do is wrap it up in tinfoil and just throw it on the barbecue and let it cook away for a few minutes. And Bob's your uncle then really with it.
Yeah.
The most important thing is don't overcook it.
Yes. Yeah.
People tend to overcook fish.
I think it's because people are a bit terrified of stuff. I don't know where the kind of fear came from way back when, but people are terrified of pork and they're terrified of fish. They're terrified.
Yeah. It's like the old mother syndrome, like, you know, just cook it for a half an hour or two. Yes. It won't kill you. It's cooked.
My first time ever having steak was a piece of intervention beef that came from some beef mountain somewhere. And there was a notice on it saying, this has been frozen, not suitable for refreezing, ensure cooked thoroughly. I think my mother had that in the pan for about 2 days.
I well believe it.
I wondered why people were a fan of steak. I couldn't understand it.
Amazingly, I talk to people in the shop and they ask, how long will it cook this for? And I say, well, stick it in the oven at 180 for 10 minutes. And they keep looking at me going, will it be raw? And I said, no, it won't be raw. It'll be cooked. Trust me. Yeah. It'll be cooked.
Because it is a very delicate meat fish, generally.
Very delicate, very delicate. And it's actually the most convenient fast food you can cook at home. So it is.
Like, you could easily have it prepared and cooked before you could get to the fish and chip shop.
When it leaves our shop, it's prepared for you. All you have to do is cook it wherever you want to do it. But I tell a lot of people, just wrap it in tinfoil, put it in the oven, cook it for 10 minutes. Can't go wrong.
Or on the barbecue.
On the barbecue as well, yes, barbecue. So we'll be pushing that over the weekend, telling everyone, wrap it in tinfoil.
The weather is going to be great for the next few days, they're saying. So the barbecues will be coming out.
It's a bad time for fishing, though, believe it or not. It is probably the worst week this year.
How come?
For fishing. Everything is high, if you understand what I'm saying. So we have high winds on the sea.
Right.
We have high tide.
Right.
And the sun is very high in the sky.
Okay.
Which is a disaster for fishing.
Do fish go lower or no?
It's unusual. Believe it or not, in high sun, they actually can see the net.
Okay.
So they can. So a lot of the summer fish they'd be catching this time of year, hake in particular, is a very popular fish because it's very light and it's gill netted, which means it's caught near the surface and they tend to swim into the net and they can see it. So they can avoid it.
Right, okay.
With the high sun.
Okay.
Then the high tides, then just boats can't go out. So, and then high wind as well after. We had a bit of a blow, I think, last weekend here.
I was away on
holidays last week, so I believe there was high winds on the sea. So then it takes about 2 or 3 days for it to settle. So last boats, believe it or not, the last boats that would land in Ireland would have been last Friday. Okay, so they didn't go out over the weekend, so they probably went out Tuesday, Wednesday, and they'd be landing tomorrow or the next day. So, like, there's a full week gone.
Wow.
I've often thought, for fishermen, like, whatever about the weather affecting farmers, if it's lashing rain, you can still go out to the field, or if it's high winds, there's still jobs need doing. But for fishermen, you could go weeks when you're just not able to put out of the harbour.
That's right, yeah, just high wind.
Mm.
High winds can do it. And then it might coincide with the time that they're allowed to fish.
Yes.
Because they're very regulated now with quotas and time that they can fish and things like that. So it can be quite difficult. It's been a very difficult year.
I think with quotas and stuff like that, I follow what Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall and his kind of various campaigns and stuff. I still don't think we've got it right yet. There still seems to be some stuff going on with, you know, quotas and fishing periods and wastage and stuff that isn't quite right.
The wastage part of it haven't got right.
Mm.
Okay, the quotas, unfortunately, we did sell out. We did sell out for the cap. So there's no point crying about that. And we did benefit through the farming for that, so there's no point crying. The wastage and the what we call is a bycatch.
Mm.
So if a boat goes out in particular to target, a boat that targets monkfish, and then they might have a certain amount of bycatch where they're allowed to catch so many other bike, which is bottom fishing basically for monk, so they're allowed to be able to catch flatfish like plaice, turbot and things like that. So if they don't have a quota for that, then they won't fish.
Right.
Because they don't want to throw back.
Yeah, the bycatch. And of course, you can't take that stuff back in if you do catch it.
So it's difficult for them. It's quite difficult for them. So they have to wait then for a quota to be allocated before they can go back out and fish. So some boats can be actually tied up for 3-4 months in a year.
Good God.
Yeah. Oh. And this time of the year, then, it's that time of year where they say, right, fishing's going to be poor. We'll send everyone off on holidays for a month and we'll overhaul our boat and we'll paint it.
Very good, yeah.
So it's really, it's a bit funny because summertime tends to be the busiest time for fish, yet the fishermen won't go out and fish.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That really is.
It is funny, yeah.
Because I would think of a kind of light, delicate fish like that as ideal for the summer weather. You know, you just don't fancy anything too hearty or too much effort of an evening. Bit of fish on the barbecue is perfect.
So, unfortunately for us, then, we tend to buy a lot of fish in from Scotland this time of year.
Okay.
So we have to buy in the auctions in Scotland and ship it back over.
Okay.
Which is a bit funny because we're an island and we have loads of boats and things, but we have to import it.
Now, I know we export most of the stuff that we catch, though, don't we?
We do. Certain fish, yeah. A lot of fish is exported out to France in particular and to England, to England and in London in particular.
Mm.
It's just one of those things, a really ironic thing. You're going to laugh at this. French boats can land mackerel in Dunmore East, we can't buy that mackerel in Dunmore East. They have to ship it back to Paris, and we buy it in Paris and bring it back.
You're joking.
You're joking.
I swear to God, yeah. That's what happens. Yeah, we cannot buy it in Dunmore East.
What's the rationale behind it?
It's French. It's French fish. It's landed off a French vessel.
Okay.
All right, so they can't sell it here directly to us, but we have to go to Rungis in Paris, buy it there and bring it back.
Right, well, while I try and get my head around that a little bit, will you stick around with us, John? Because
yeah,
we haven't even started to talk about the varieties of fish yet, so there's still plenty to talk about. But we better take an ad break. And remember, you can get in touch with us if you have any questions for John about fish. You can text us on 086 353 7782, or you can call the station 776 2777, or email the show, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. We'll be back just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to the Kitchen Garden with me, Francis Nesbitt, and I'm joined by Mags Morrissey, and I'm joined by John Hoyne from the Fisherman's Market in Hebron. John, thanks for sticking around.
No problem.
Now, during the ad break there, Mags asked you what's the most sustainable fish that we should be going for in the fishmongers. A few years ago we were told to leave the poor old cod alone, although I think stocks have kind of recovered a little bit.
Recovering.
Yeah, what's the one that we should all be using more of?
At the moment, in the past few years, hake tends to be a very popular fish. It's a strong fish. It seems to be in good supply. Affordable, which is the most important thing. Because fish is still at the higher end of the cost bracket, and we find that hake comes in at very good value and is a very popular fish at the minute. But like everything else, all the stocks are managed quite well now. So it's kind of a more all-round fish, or all-year-round fish, I should say.
Okay.
Now,
there are some seasonal kind of fish as well. Like, I always associate the summer with mackerel.
Yeah. Mackerel is probably the best fish, believe it or not. But mackerel caught and eaten within a half an hour is a completely different fish to mackerel that's caught and 2 days old.
Even though
you still think 2 days is not much, but it's just a completely different fish. So anyone who fishes can tell you that mackerel caught straight and cooked straight away is just out of this world compared to any other fish. They tell you not to eat, believe it or not, is fish. You think you're trying to get as fresh as possible, but they tell you, like cod in particular, shouldn't be eaten straight away. It should be 2 days.
Okay.
Because it needs, like meat, just needs to settle a bit. If you eat cod that's straight out of the sea, it's very watery, and it's tasteless.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of the flavour develops then.
The flavour develops.
So just like you'd hang your beef.
2 to 4 days is ideal.
Oh, right, okay. Now, I suppose when you go into the fisherman's market or your local supermarket, the fish that you're picking up there would have been caught a few days previously anyway, so you wouldn't have to worry.
Well, I like to, separate fishman's market from the supermarket.
Good, I'm glad you did that. Good man.
Thank you. I was in Cork this morning at 4 o'clock picking up fish.
Wow.
That fish was landed yesterday evening. Even though I just said the boat was probably out for 2 days, so it was two to 3 days old. And we filleted that fish off this morning between 7 and 9, and it was sold at 9 o'clock.
Wow. All gone. Do you have a lot of the restaurants coming into you guys?
We have a good few restaurants, yeah. Tend to scale that back a lot this year, more concentrating on Fisherman's Market shop and selling to the public. And we supply a lot of butchers now, believe it or not.
Oh.
A lot of butchers are switching to try and have a range and they want to have fish. So we do a lot of pre-packed products for them.
Okay, very good. And you do the processing here in Hebron for that kind of stuff?
We do all the processing in Hebron, so we do. It's an open floor plan, so when you walk into the shop, you're in the factory as well, so you can see the fish being process.
I like seeing the lads working there and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And anytime I go in, it's great that all of the fish is kind of prepared for you. So when I go home, I need to do nothing except cook it, so the scales are taken off and it's cleaned and all of that kind of. Because a lot of people are scared of that side of fish, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately, I suppose from years ago where fish wasn't boned. We call it pin boned, where you take the bones out. So my philosophy when I started 10 years ago was I knew there was a fear in fish. And the most important thing to do with fish is remove the bones, at least anyway. Well, you try and get all the bones. You can never get them all, but I've never failed yet. I never had one complaint yet. Someone come in and say there was bones in your fish.
Very good.
So I'm lucky that way. So the old rule, no bones, no skin, no fear. That's basically it.
Oh, I like that. That's good. Yeah, make it easy.
But I always insist on people cooking their fish with the skin on. And then just, because the meat will peel away from the skin when it's cooked. But I always cook the fish right. with the skin on. If you don't like the skin, don't eat it.
Yeah, I love the skin.
I love the skin, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I love everybody else's skin at the table if they don't eat it. Yeah. Particularly if it's done on the barbecue or something like that. Goes nice.
He's very
crispy.
Slow about sharing the cake too, isn't he?
Did you not have any cake? Max, did you not bring in John? Did you not bring any cake for John?
Sharing
oh, Max.
Cake.
Here, you can have some of mine, I suppose. Not too much,
Thank
Nick.
You.
Not too much.
Not too much. I just wanted to taste Max's cooking, that's all.
Now, down in the shop, it's not just... the fish, it is nice, isn't it? Mm. It's not just fish that you do down there. There's a lot of other kind of stuff, accompaniments to the fish, like you
we try, yeah, samphire. And spread it out a bit. Samphire tends to be, it's very popular, and it's actually, by nature, sea asparagus. Mm. That's what it would be called, and it's salty by nature. So it's natural salt in it because it grows in the estuaries. And it's a beautiful compliment. Just it's more of a garnish.
Yeah.
So I also tell people a small bit of it, blanch it or just pan fry it lightly with a bit of butter maybe or something if you want to get away from the healthy part of it, and just pop it on top of the fish. Beautiful.
Oh, it's a lovely accompaniment.
Beautiful, yeah.
And shellfish, you do a lot of the shellfish and stuff down there as well?
We do try and do a bit, yeah. Like, when you're this far in, people tend to not want shellfish as such. So we do mussels and we do oysters and things by order, but... it's amazing when people go away on holidays and in the Mediterranean, they eat shellfish all around them. And when they come home, then it might really pop into their head this time of the year. Oh, I'm on holidays or I'm back from holidays, I want to have mussels. And you mightn't sell mussels in the shop in the wintertime in particular.
That's funny. I see there's a big Bord Beer campaign on at the moment for flex your mussels. I heard on the radio.
We eat mussels in our house and the kids love them.
Well, yeah, but my kids love them too. I'm very lucky with my kids. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and anytime we go anywhere, can we eat fish? So it's brilliant, yeah. It's like the old, when I sit at home, it's like your father saying to you, look, eat your food, like everything, eat the fish.
I like when I travel to France, though, and you go into a restaurant and there's a kid, like 4 or 5 years of age, sitting there with a bowl of mussels in front of them, and they're pulling the mussels apart and getting stuck in, you know. And I encourage my kids to do that whenever we travel, or even mussels at home, because delicious, nutritious kind of food. We were kind of, well, I didn't have one until I was in my 20s, I'd say. You're kind of terrified of those as well for a long time.
Well, I was lucky because my uncle lived in Bantry. And he used to bring, I remember getting a big sack of mussels brought up, actually. At one stage, would have been the first time we had mussels as a kid at home. And loved them from then on, actually.
Mm. Big fan of seafood. And do you freshwater fish down in the shop as well?
Trout? Yeah, a bit of, trout. Yeah, we get trout, very good quality trout from Goatsbridge Trout Farm. It's popular, very popular too. So it is.
And the most popular fish that you sell down in the fisherman's market? Salmon.
And I have to say, unfortunately, it's salmon.
Wow.
And still, it's a good fish because it's high in the omegas.
Yeah.
It's a fatty fish and it's high in the omega trees. But I like to see more people go to the white fish, wild white fish.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, when you sit back and you think about it, fish is probably the last wild thing that we're eating.
Yeah.
So it is. Everything else is farmed or cultured. So I tend to like to push people towards the cod and the hake, whiting, haddock, the cheaper fish and things like that, plaice, for simple reason. It is basically the last wild thing that we're eating, and there should be no fear in it because we do remove the bones, can take the skin off for you as well if you want to, and it's the quickest to cook.
Yeah. You know. Now, the flatfish seem to have kind of gone out of fashion an awful lot. I'm a big fan of the flatfish, but they don't seem... I don't see them on so many menus anymore and stuff.
It's expensive.
Ah, right,
if you think about it, it's expensive. If you're a restaurant and you're buying plaice, you're serving the plaice, but you're taking the skin off.
Yeah.
All right, and the yield on that, when a chef is doing his costings, the yield on that is quite high. So if you're taking skin off cod, say, you're losing about 10 to 12%. But if you're taking skin off of plaice... you're losing about 24, 25, 26%.
Oh, by weight, of course.
Yes, by weight.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
If you're buying, obviously from me, by the kilo, and you're buying a half a kilo of plaice, say a fillet is half a kilo, by the time you trim that, you have one portion.
Oh, right.
So it's expensive.
It works out very expensive.
Yeah, it works out very expensive.
What would be the most exotic kind of request you'd get?
Marlin, swordfish, things like that. It'd be... kind of far out, like a little bit. Obviously, people come back again from holidays and bobby head on a barbecue and have they want this idea that it's good. Like, you know, tuna is very popular. Fresh tuna is very popular.
And can you get that easily here?
Yeah. It's good. It's good. It goes through strains, believe it or not. Like, you get a good batch for a couple of weeks, And then all of a sudden, then you might get a bad batch of it for some reason. Like, you know, not necessarily a bad batch, but just the colour might be varying on it.
Okay.
Like, the minute we got really deep red tuna for the past few weeks, and like next week, for some reason, they might just buy it from a different location. It might be slightly browner.
Mm.
You know, everybody just relates to tuna being red, like a real dark, deep red, like sushi grade.
Yeah. Mm.
It's hard. It's hard to get. Like, I tell people, I'll be honest with them, when if people come in and I look at the tuna comes from, because I buy it. I buy it off a supplier who buys it in Paris, so I don't get to choose it until it arrives at my door and it's delivered to my door. And right. I look at it, and then I'm happy with it, I send it back. You know, but if I'm happy with it, I keep it. But it's one of those things where you could walk into my shop, and we might have gotten tune in, but I probably sent it back and said, we don't have it, sorry, it's not good enough.
Right, okay, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Just the way it goes.
That's quality control, that's good, and you want people to come back into the shop again.
Do.
Yeah, yeah, you don't want anybody going home with something they're going to be unhappy with.
Exactly.
And the salmon, that's farmed salmon then, I presume?
Farmed salmon, we buy all our farmed salmon from Scotland. It tends to be better because a lot of the farms in Scotland are still individually owned, mm. i.e. they're coming from a farming background, so it's family owned. It's like farmers here, like,
yeah,
who are
yeah.
very proud about their beef or their dairy and or pigs or their chickens, whatever. It's the same in Scotland as in Norway and say up further, say in Shetland and things like that. It tends to be big companies own them.
Okay.
So they're driven
by the bottom
multinationals,
line.
You know?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, that's nice that you're able to kind of choose where you get it in from. I'm amazed that it's still the most popular fish, though.
It's incredible. Yeah, because we can relate to it, because it's probably the first fish that was pin-boned.
Yes.
So anybody who's buying, say, fish, salmon in supermarkets, say, it's always related to it as being having no bones.
Yeah.
And if it's still in supermarkets today, even, if you buy cod, it's not boned.
Mm.
There's bones in it.
Yeah.
So people tend to go towards the salmon.
And some of the new Irish residents, so some of our friends from Eastern Europe and stuff, have they place different kind of demands on you? I know
Christmas carp is the one for Christmas, but throughout the year, no, they love their cod and salmon, but they tend to go more towards the cod or pollock is the one they look for.
And where would the carp, where would you source that from?
Carp mainly comes from Romania or Central Europe.
Okay.
It's a Christmas fish. You wouldn't sell it during the year.
I tried it once. I do a lot of fishing. I like fishing for carp, but they'd always go back because I tried eating it once and it's
very
tricky.
Very silty, isn't it?
Yeah, a muddy kind of taste.
It's muddy,
yes.
So like...
Apparently the tradition goes that you catch your carp and then you bring it home, you put it in the bath for about a week and in the fresh water in the bath, and it cleans itself and then you have it for a Christmas Eve dinner.
Okay.
Apparently that's not something
that's
I've ever done.
Yeah, you don't have a bath for Christmas yourself then.
Well, if you look, you study what carp eat, you do it.
Anyway, John, thanks a million for coming into us. And you're in the Hebron here. The shop is open from...
Monday to Saturday.
Yep.
Monday to Friday we're 9 to 6 and Saturday we are 9 to 5.
And is Friday the busiest day or Thursday?
Still the busiest day, yeah. The fear of God is still in us.
Isn't that great?
Yeah,
isn't
it? Good Friday.
It's not tradition or something,
isn't it? I thank religion, the Catholic Church, for 2 days of the year. Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. I might kind of have one every week.
And John just reminds us all that we shouldn't eat meat on Fridays, every Friday. And you're on Facebook, The Fisherman's Market.
Fisherman's Market.
That's great, John. Thanks a million for coming in to join us. We're going to take another short ad break. We'll be back just after these.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt. I'm joined by Mags Morrissey. And remember, you can get in touch with us on 086 353 7782 or you can call the station 776 2777 or email kitchengarden@corkc.ie. That was very interesting, all about the fish,
really
wasn't it?
It really was, wasn't it?
Yeah,
fascinating.
Great.
And I want to buy fish now.
Yeah, yeah, I fancy a bit of fish myself, actually.
Yeah.
And what I love is that the kind of quality control goes on in the shop. Like, John's, there's no messing around. He's up, he goes to Cork 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, picks out what's good to look at, sends it back if it doesn't look right. You know, that's fantastic.
He cares about it.
He does care about it, yeah, it's obvious. And he wants people to come back to the shop. I love the shop down there.
Oh, so do I, actually.
Yeah,
that's where I would go for fish, generally.
But
we probably don't eat enough fish, I'll have to confess.
Mm. I'd have it once a week, I suppose. Not always on a Friday now, but I'd have fish probably once a week. Something I'd kind of lean towards as well if I go out, if there was something unusual.
I would generally have it if I'm out, which is funny, but...
So you'd another recipe for gooseberries there.
Well, that is kind of the, you know, the easy staple sort of solid kind of recipe. But then if you want fancy...
Jeez, will you look at a mess that John made of the slice of cake. Took a big chunk off the top of it. I want some free Samford next time I'm in
the fish. This is a recipe that I did actually 2 years ago for an event, and it was demolished really quickly. I actually didn't even get any of it, but it was so nice. So it's a Victoria sponge with creme patisserie and gooseberry compote.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it looks very impressive, and it does take a little bit of effort because you've got to make the sponge, the compote and the patisserie, but it's still actually really worth it. And serve it on a nice plate, lots of icing sugar on top. So for the sponge, you'll need 225 grams of butter, nice and soft, 225 of caster sugar, 4 large eggs, 225 of self-raising flour, and a little bit of milk, and some icing sugar then for dusting. So same again, beat your butter and sugar, add in your eggs slowly and your flour slowly, and you're going to cook that in the oven, two separate tins, so you've got a top and a bottom, two separate tins, 180 for, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes or thereabouts. Then for the creme patisserie, 250 mils of full fat milk, half a vanilla pod split lengthways, and the seeds scraped, 3 large egg yolks, 45 grams of sugar, 40 grams of corn flour, 142 mils of double cream, and a little bit of elderflower cordial. And that does kind of give a really nice flavour to it, and it does work very well with the gooseberries. So you're going to heat the milk and the vanilla and add in your sugar, and bring it, you know, cook it until you've got something nice and thick. And then you're going to make your compote, which is 400 grams of gooseberries, sugar, 50 grams of sugar, and 2 tablespoons of elderflower cordial.
The elderflower works really well with the gooseberries.
It does,
and
yeah.
They're contemporaries as well. The elderflowers are out at the moment.
Well, generally they say once the elderflowers start to flower, you can pick your gooseberries. And even you're kind of picking green gooseberries generally at that stage, but they're still, you can use them in pies. You probably wouldn't eat them from the bush, but you can use them in pies and jams and all that. So if you want to make green gooseberry jam or green gooseberry tart or whatever.
So you can sweeten them then, obviously, yeah.
You can, yeah, yeah.
We're just coming to the end, I suppose, of the elderflower. So a good opportunity to use up the last of the few kind of flowers while they're out now.
Yeah, I'd say another, probably get another week or so out of them on that.
You always get a late kind of flower here and there, but generally the bulk of them has passed. The scent of over the last few days has just been incredible.
And it really loads of people have been making cordial, actually. It seems to be very popular this year, so
yeah,
which is
there's
great.
Lots of it about.
Yeah.
So that sounds really nice. What's next on that? What do we?
So when your sponges are baked and cooled, you're going to put your patisserie on first, and then pour your compote over that, and then put your laid your top part of the sponge on top, put it on a nice plate and serve it.
And did you bring in one of those?
No, I actually am making
one of those. So you're slacking.
No, I brought that one. Interesting. I am making one of these for Sunday, actually.
So you can bring it in for the repeat on Monday, is that?
Yeah, that's right. I'll keep you a bit.
Keep me a bit. I like the sound
but
of that.
But that is, like, I have to say, that's quite delicious. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds absolutely lovely. Now, speaking of seasonal things, in the garden, we have our elderflowers and we have our gooseberries. I cut some hay the other day, so I cut the grass to make some hay, and I'm turning that every evening, which reminds me of another seasonal visitor to the garden, the horsefly. Have you noticed any of them when you're out doing your jobs?
Not really, actually.
Oh, God, they're out in strength out at Crowan. Now, it's not a famous year for them like it was for the midges, but making hay and horseflies just go together hand in hand. Nasty little creatures.
Yeah, they're not nice for them.
No, big bites off them. But as you get hot and you're making the hay, I find they tend to wander around after you, keeping you company.
Oh, yes.
One of the kind of bad things about that job. It's only the female that bites you as well.
Oh, right, I didn't know that.
The males generally stick to eating pollen. But the females need the extra protein from the blood for their eggs.
And the bite is actually sore, isn't it?
It's a big proboscis that they have, and it has two kind of cutting blades on the end of it that like break the skin open so that they can get in.
They bite horses, like. I can see why the horses hate them and stuff, because they do actually hurt and they seem to swarm around them.
Yeah, they've been mentioned in literature an awful lot, and in ancient Greece they were actually mentioned in one play as being famous for driving people to madness. And even Shakespeare wrote about them, the maddening gadfly in King Lear and Anthony and Cleopatra. That's the horsefly that he's talking about.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but I suppose any of those cultures where you were dealing with horses all the time, you would have been in close proximity. And they can drive the animal absolutely insane.
Yeah, they can. Yeah.
And smaller animals as well, not just horses, but like beef cattle. I've seen them on beef animals, and like down one side, you might have like half a dozen or a dozen of them. Nasty.
They are nasty.
They like to lay their eggs near standing water. So if there's any kind of like slow streams or pools or even troughs or anything like that around the place, you'll find you'll have a higher proportion of them.
Okay. So maybe, to be honest, it's very dry up in the hills in near Thomastown at the moment.
That's
so
why
maybe
you're
that's
not getting any.
Yeah.
The eggs hatch out after about 6 days and drop to the ground, and they spend a larval stage there then before they hatch and go off looking for somebody else to eat, like me.
Not having a good time.
Not with the horse flies, no. Now, a much nicer flying creature that I am having some nice times with are the bees. I've seen the bees enjoying the poppies, but I brought in some honey, actually, first of the harvest of 2018, but we might just take a short break before we talk about the bees and the honey. Call us now on 056-7762-777.
In Flanders fields the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place. And in the sky the lark, still bravely singing, flies scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved. And now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep. Though poppies grow in Flanders fields.
Now, I know it's not Remembrance Sunday or any time close to it, but I always think of that poem by Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae around this time of the year, because the poppies are out and blooming in the garden, and if you're travelling in France at the moment, you'll see them all over the place.
Well, I actually saw a lovely field of them on the way to Dublin this morning, actually. Red ones in a tillage field.
Yeah.
Obviously haven't sprayed the life out of it. I grew poppies this year, but they're quite slow, actually. I'm not sure we're going to get poppies this year. It might be next year, but anyway.
Well, if they do flower and you leave the seed heads in place, or you take the seed heads off when they start to rattle and sprinkle them around, you will have poppies forevermore.
Hopefully.
Last 2 years ago, I went to buy some annual flowers, and in a kind of a hardware store in Kilkenny, which shall remain nameless, I saw packets of poppy seed, and they were ridiculously expensive. So I didn't buy them. And as I came out, I noticed that there had been poppies planted in the car park, and they'd all gone to seed. And I went over and broke off one or two seed heads, brought them home, and there were thousands of seeds. And now I have the opium poppy, beautiful colours, massive, big, delicate flowers, purples and reds and pinks, and they are all over the garden now.
Okay.
And little seedlings popping up on the drive, and I'll just leave those in place and they'll scatter their seed about, and I hope that I'll have poppies forevermore. A flower I absolutely love.
Yeah, they're
really
beautiful.
Do.
And
beautiful.
Such a variation of colours and sizes and everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
And even the native little red poppy, so delicate, but really cheery, and against the blue sky makes a really lovely
photograph. They look perfect with the oxide daisies, don't they?
Yes, yeah, great accompaniment. Yeah. And the bees love them. And speaking of bees, I've brought in some honey here, which is the first harvest of 2018. It's a spring harvest. So this is the flowers that they would have had during late spring. This was harvested just a little over a week ago. Have you tried it?
Yes.
It's good, isn't it?
It's really nice.
Now, it's very, very different to the honey that I would have brought in from the main harvest last year, which is the kind of summer honey, which I think has a much more vegetable-like flavour, and would include like the nectar from the lime trees, as well as, I suppose, some of the flowers from the veg garden. But this is very, very, very sweet.
Mm. Yeah, it is. I can't actually work out what I can taste from it. I'm sure, like, the gorse and all sorts of things in it. Like, it's lovely.
Mostly dandelion, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
Dandelion would be a big constituent in that. And gorse, yeah, like you said, and some of the heathers. But oh, it's really, really nice, but very, very different. And I should have maybe brought in some of last year's autumn honey for a comparison. But the colour is very different. The flavour is very different. And because it's local, I'll give some of this now to Charlie, because he tends to suffer a little bit from congestion during the pollen season, and this works wonders with him. So if anybody suffers with congestion or hay fever type symptoms, if you're able to get some local honey, it has helped an awful lot of people, and it may help you as well.
Well, I'm hoping to actually take some honey tomorrow.
Oh, out of the hive?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going in tomorrow?
I'm thinking about it, yes.
Oh, very good, very good.
I have a smoker now, so...
Very good.
No excuse.
So you're going to go into the bees and take off a super of honey?
Yes.
Excellent. So that'll be your first harvest then?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Well, best of luck with that. We hope to see you back on the show next week.
Well, I got one bee sting last week and I didn't have a huge reaction, so that's probably a good sign.
Well, you do kind of build up a bit of a tolerance to them, so they don't affect me anywhere near as bad as they used to. And the girls are happy. There's lots and lots of bees about. Like, they seem in good form, that we're past the peak of the kind of swarm season. I didn't get too many phone calls, actually, to go rescue swarms from anywhere.
My dad in Tipperary, actually, had a couple of swarms. And he said, actually, one day he looked out and there was a swarm just flying through the yard.
Oh, it's very dramatic.
Yeah.
If you see it, it's incredible. And the noise.
Yeah,
you can see why a lot of people would be scared.
He was fascinated. And then another swarm actually stopped in a lilac tree that's just near the kitchen. So his friend came along, collected those. But they left behind, I suppose, you know, a large fist-sized clump of them were still there, actually, when I called over. And then he put a bait hive in the garden, and that was filling with bees as well.
So there's obviously somebody keeping bees near your father's house, and all of these swarms are escaping from there.
So he's absolutely fascinated watching these and talking about them and reporting on it. And
oh, sure, if he comes up to your place, you'll be able to show him what's what out at the hives at your place.
Yeah, I will indeed. So,
and are the tone of yours this year, are they calmer?
They're very calm, actually.
Good.
They seem happy and calm, which is good.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems to the size seems to have grown dramatically.
Well,
I'm obviously doing something right.
Yeah, leaving them to their own devices, maybe. But well, let's hope it's a good year for them, because they could do it. They need a bit of a break, and we need them, don't we?
Yes, indeed.
Now, you wanted to talk in Nature Notes this week. You wanted to talk about
gannets.
Gannets. So we were talking about seafood earlier on. Another lover of seafood is the gannet, a bird I love actually when I'm out on the boat going fishing, because if you watch where the gannet is plunging into the water, that'll kind of indicate where there's some bait fish. Where there's bait fish, there's bigger fish. So you head for the gannets and you try and catch the bigger ones.
Everybody likes watching gannets, I think. And they're quite a... everyone will be at the sea at some stage this summer and stuff. And they're all around the coast, so you'll see them. They don't breed everywhere, though. They breed in certain colonies. So
now, remind people what they look like. Which ones are the gannets?
So they're a large white bird with kind of yellowish heads and a black tip on the wings and long bills. And they have a wingspan of nearly 2 meters.
They're a big bird.
Mm. I always think you don't kind of realise how big seabirds are, because you're always looking at them in the distance generally until you see them up close. But they are a big bird. And when they can kind of dive from like 30, 40 meters. And they can hit the water at 100 kilometres an hour.
My God.
And because of that, they can actually go deeper than most airborne birds. So they kind of have a competitive advantage. But they can, they have a few kind of special features, including air sacs in their cheeks and around their heads and stuff, which kind of act like bubble wrap. Because if you think of them hitting the water at that speed, they'd need to have some sort of special feature. And also their eyes are positioned kind of far enough into the forward, so they have really good vision and stuff, so they can see right in front of them. And they've got no external nostrils, so I suppose they don't have water shooting up their nostrils when they hit it at that speed. They lay one egg, one chalky kind of blue egg, which is not a lot, I suppose. And they're actually on the amber list here because they don't have that many breeding sites. So one of their main sites, one of the Skellig, or the Salty Islands, and they, not Skellig Michael, the smaller Skellig, I think everyone might have seen the pictures recently of the nests. Did you see those on
No.
the... it was quite sad, actually, looking. They're using... they would have made their nests out of seaweed and bits and pieces and stuff, but they're now, like, picking up plastic and things. So it looked really like the side of... like a tip of just bits of fishing nets and all sorts of plastic and stuff. That's what they're making their nests of. And of course, then if they get entangled in any of that, it doesn't biodegrade, it doesn't rot, not like seaweed would. So yeah, it was kind of sad sight, actually. And Birdwatch Ireland, like there's, I think there was in the last count and stuff, there was like 26,000 gannets on that island. They tried to get on, it's a very hard island to get on to anyway, to to kind of monitor it and see what they could do, see if they could clean it up in some shape or form, but they failed to get on, actually. And really, birds with 2 meter wingspan coming at you, you'd probably get out of the way too. So I'm not sure what the plan is, but it really kind of highlighted the whole plastics in the sea situation. If you see the photograph, it's quite sad looking, actually.
I don't know whether it's just because we're hearing a lot more about it in the press or people are talking about it more, but I went for a paddle with Charlie down in Bag and Bun out in a sea kayak a couple of weeks ago, and I just saw plastic everywhere. There was plastic floating in the water, there was plastic on the little tiny beaches that we were going up against, the main beach that we were on, there was plastic, and a lot of it did seem to be kind of detritus from the fishing industry. Like there was large chunks of net, bits of floats from lobster pots and stuff like that, so it wasn't all just kind of domestic waste. Bits of fish crates and, you know, an awful lot of it
So once someone was like pulling up silage plastic, black sand from like the bottom of the sea off Kerry somewhere. So yeah, but
we really need to start minding things a bit more, don't we?
We do, we do.
So the gannet, a phenomenal bird to see enter the water, and it hits at that speed so that it can get down further.
So and catch whatever it catches and stuff. So it takes 5 years for them to actually reach maturity.
Wow.
So they have a longish lifespan.
And then they just lay one egg when
one
they
egg.
Get there.
Yeah.
How long did they live?
I think over 10 years.
Right.
They're related to the booby bird. Have you ever heard of those?
I did, yeah. Things didn't work out too well for them. But there's, it's kind of a risky strategy though, isn't it, just laying one egg?
It is. Yeah, so there's another site off Dublin, not as big a site, so those, you know, if you only have those 2-3 sites and stuff, well, if something happens the island, if there's a storm and they all get blown off and stuff, you're at risk. So even though when you're at the sea, you think there's lots of them because you'll see them everywhere, but their breeding sites are actually quite limited, so that's a concern.
Well, let's hope that they don't go the way of the corncrake and become ever more scarce, because they're a fabulous bird, and I've always enjoyed watching them out at the coast, and they tend to leave you alone, not like the more common seagulls, which would pester you looking for bits and pieces and stealing your ice cream and so on. Fabulous bird. Now, just a few jobs to do in the garden this week. This is peak gardening season now, so we could just spend the hour reminding people of all of the jobs that they need to do in the garden, but we try not to kind of put them off. What are you doing most of in the garden at the moment?
Watering, actually, probably. Right. And I had a small problem with geese eating my lettuce, but I now have a new fence, which I'm very excited about. So I'm going to plant some more radishes this weekend and some more lettuce, actually. But things are coming on, like I've peas and the runner beans are starting to flower. So it's starting to look good, actually.
Yeah, successional sowing is really what it's about. And at this time of the year, if you're able to get a harvest, go use the stuff from the garden. So if you've grown lettuce or grown peas, or if any of your crops are up and ready, don't leave it until next week to use them. Go out and have a small harvest and use it for your lunch or use it for your tea. tree, because that's really what it's all about. Stay on top of the weeds as much as you can, and as you're doing, keep sowing in batches so that you've a continued supply all the way through to winter. Maybe do a bit of thinning out of some of your seedlings from some of the things that maybe you sowed earlier in the year, so some of that kale or swedes or turnips, as they begin to swell, it's time to start thinning some of those out. And then it's also a time that we can do a little bit of summer pruning on the apple trees, and that'll help the fruit to swell out. And on the little clusters of apples, if you're left after the June drop with two or three apples growing together, I always thin them out a little bit as well, which helps the fruit, the individual fruits, to swell.
So how many would you leave together then?
Well, if there's a cluster of three or four, I'd maybe break that down to two, because you don't really want four tiny little apples. It's much better to get two or even one good size apple. And if the tree is trying to produce too many on one branch or one spur, it just, they won't swell up enough.
Okay.
So that's enough to do, I think, in the garden for this week. And we've run out of time again in the Kitchen Garden Show. So we hope you enjoy your garden and you enjoy the good weather and you enjoy this midsummer time. And I'm going to leave you with a piece of music today, which is the Midsummer Song by Frederick Delius. This is from 1908. And remember, during the week, you can stay in touch with us by email, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. We'll be back same time next week.